At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Dr. Christopher Mason, a geneticist, computational biologist. He's a professor at the Weill Cornell Medicine School. However, the author of The Next 500 Years. In the 23rd century, we have engineered life. There's Homo sapiens and his or her allies, friends, companions, including AI. We're on a generational ship and we're headed to another sun. There are challenges. We're not going to engineer this. I'm going to talk about some aspects of Chris's presentation that are exciting. Chris, on board this generational ship are exo-wombs. Why and what does that do for creating the possibility of life throughout the galaxy?
This technology that underlies exo-wombs, or really kind of artificial uteruses, hasn't really exploded in the past couple decades, where now you can grow almost to term, at least some goats that have been done, as well as some mice, from embryogenesis almost all the way to adulthood, or to birth, I should say, you know, the entire process of development, embryogenesis, becoming a fetus, and then making your way into the world to live on your own. And this kind of exo-womb technology could, in theory, give you the greatest possible cellular liberty. We talked about before that all your cells should, you know, you should be able to have physical liberty with your body and your cellular liberty with your cells. And this lets you say, well, if I would like to have a system that can grow the human embryos, you could even have a robot watching over them while they grow and they get to the new planet. And then you get human caretakers, because it's hard to get humans to go and survive all the way to the other planet. You either have to put them asleep or have a generation ship where multiple people live in multiple generations live and die. Or you have all the embryos frozen and have a robot do this. And there was recently a show called Raised by Wolves that put this into video format. So this idea has been in science fiction for a while, but we actually now have the technology that can enable it almost completely.
I like the idea of using that chloro human, because that either bypasses or solves the food source. You need sunlight, yep, and the chlorophyll that is part of chlorohumans, although I don't fancy looking like an amoeba spread all over Boston Harbor. But I understand we've got a mission here. We've got a mission. Along with exo-wombs, and there's some other language here. What is diapause? I think you just described it.
Yes, a bit of a way to have diapause is similar to hibernation, where if you have an embryo that you eventually want your embryo to come to, you know, full term and become its own organism. But diapause is a way where you can actually have an embryo be fertilized, but just wait. And this is surprising, because you think, well, that sounds like a weird thing to do to an embryo. But from an evolutionary perspective, it's actually brilliant, because if for some reason you know that the resources are limited at that time, you can pause embryogenesis. You can basically say, well, hang on, we'll just develop a little bit later. And so some of the genes that we know that drive this process, as well as hibernation, we now know. So we can actually have a similar process in humans, or in these exo-wombs that are on their way towards another planet, as you begin the embryo, but then have to just wait a little while till you get to the right spot.
We are on this generational ship, and we have a number of challenges. One is, as we just discussed, it's going to be a long time. Presuming you have the energy to get there, and presuming you've got the navigation tools to get there, it's going to be a long time. What can we learn from bears? I have black bears all around me here in Western Connecticut. What can I learn from them, Chris?
Bears are extraordinary, and I think that is one of the most extraordinary and wonderful parts of being a geneticist today, is that we're continually sequencing and understanding and learning about life and how it's adapted. And bears are a great example. When they hibernate, their blood becomes as thick as basically barbecue sauce. As most people know, they eat a bunch, and then they basically sleep and barely move. But, you know, their blood sugars spike all over the place, insulin spikes, but they don't get diabetes. And they really have this amazing, there's thousands of genes that become active to enable this state. And so we didn't know what they were 10 years ago, but I talk about some work by Joanna Kelly, who's a friend who studies this. And we now know some of the very specific molecular mechanisms that are creating us this hibernation state. So if we could, in theory, learn, you know, deploy some of those genes in humans, it's possible we could take some of those traits of hibernation, although it hasn't been tried yet. But NASA actually just funded several grants to look at this exact question, because now that we know what's driving it in bears, maybe we could try and, you know, start in human cells and maybe even try it in humans.
So we could both make embryos dormant for X number of years and make the humans or the human, I don't know what to say, human bear? Also available for a number of years. We can put, and not just depend on robots. I mean, you want backup systems.
Exactly. Because there could be a radiation surge. There could be a problem with one of the ships. So it's good to have, like, NASA normally has a backup plan for every backup plan. So that's one thing that's been fun working with them, is there's almost always redundancy built into every system. And so we'd want to do the same thing with our biology as we do with our engineering.
We're in the 24th century now, and the generation ships are launched. And we introduce, and this is pure Asimov. It's very clever of you. What is a guardian?
A guardian is us. I think at that time, this is the fulfillment of the deontogenic ethics, is that there is, whether it's AI or whether it's carbon-based or humans, the guardians are people who recognize that, we recognize it in ourselves. Life is rare. Life is unique. You know, life's not perfect. There are some really mean people and angry people, and, you know, people can steal and murder and maim. But also, life is precious in the universe. It is, as far as we know, so far only on this planet. And it is up to us to serve as the guardians of it, you know, not just in a selfish and solipsistic way, but because we were dependent on these organisms to survive ourselves. And we can serve as actually the guardians. It is a duty I propose for our species. And most people pick one or two duties for their own lives, but we have yet to really nucleate around a duty for our species. And I propose that we should be a new kind of species, which is the guardians, the ones that recognize the frailty of life itself, but can actually act to preserve it and even expand it to where it survives.
If I understand the logic, Chris, you have to take a Cornell lab with you when you go exploring, because you're not going to know. You call something ISRU, in-situ resource utilization. You've got to carry pharmacy with you. You have to carry the elements with you, because we don't generate enough vitamins of ourselves. You have to take all that with you. Plus a Christopher Mason chloro human. We have to take all this, correct? All that has to go.
That's right. And, you know, so there's what I call this almost like as a cellular, you know, ineptitude, is that, you know, there's several amino acids that we need, you know, in our bodies, but that we don't make. And so but other organisms do. So I have a whole section in the book that describes, we can just take those genes from those other organisms and make it so we can make all of our own amino acids, make our own vitamin C. We used to do, other primates do this, but we no longer do. And so we could reactivate that gene. And so I describe ways to just make us a little bit more self-reliant. And also then, yeah, we'd bring the lab. We'd have to bring our pharmacy, create our medicines wherever the new planet is. But the fun part I actually love is that I describe a lot of the planets that have been found in the past 10 years that we, you know, this was pure science fiction 20, 25 years ago. We had no planets that we could even look at to maybe survive on. Now it was extraordinarily, you know, euphoric to make the list of, here's all these planets that we could get to and possibly survive. We just have to get there. But we didn't have the technology to get there 20 years ago, and we didn't even know the planets to where we could survive. But now we have both.
And Chris, a final 30 seconds. How long would it take to create a human being, starting here in the 21st century, to create many human beings who can adapt to low gravity, to radiation, to the fact that they're going to have to generate their own vitamins? Is that centuries in creation, or can we do that in several generations? What's your understanding of DNA?
It could be done, as shown with the silver fox, it could be in a matter of 50 years, you know, 40 or 50 years to get the very first organisms, the first humans that have been created with all those traits. But I propose to do an intergenerational clinical trial, basically. Like, we would want to watch these humans for two or three generations to make sure there's nothing that we've missed. I think we would really need, the reason the 500-year plan is so long is because I'd want us to have a couple centuries where we've really demonstrated safety and efficacy, like you do for any therapy, before we really say, okay, now we're good. Off you go to another planet. If we're in a rush, like if something goes wrong with the planet before then, maybe we wouldn't wait that long if we're worried about extinction. But if we have the time, I would propose it probably within about 200 years, it should be possible.
Christopher Mason, Dr. Christopher Mason of the Weill Cornell Medicine School. He's a professor, geneticist, and computational biologist. Most importantly, the author of The Next 500 Years, Engineering Life to Reach New Worlds. This is Foundation with Details. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.